Speaking today, Rabbi Sayer, I want to discuss with you a few short ideas, halachic ideas relating to the Parashas HaShavua. Maybe not halacha, but just not purely halacha. Everything I'm telling you is coming from the Sefer Das Konisa, from Rabbi Gibbs, that we used yesterday, and I want to finish up the section with Parashas by Yishlach. He has some very nice things. First thing is something which was mentioned. Yaakov Avinu, when he comes in contact with Esav, he was afraid. Yaakov was terrified what may happen when he meets up with Esav. He was afraid for his life. He was afraid that Esav may indeed kill, may take his life, the life of his wives, his four wives, and his children. So what did he do? He did three things. He divided his people into two parts, two machanos. He was mispalel, that was the primary thing he did, and he also prepared a gift. Now, when he divided up his family, the pasuk goes all the way out to tell us exactly how he divided his family. Who went first, who went second, who went third, who went fourth. Who went in the front? Who did he put in the very, very front, in the danger zone? We're assuming now the danger zone is the one who goes in the front. The one who's going to meet Esav first is the most vulnerable to the wrath, to the attack of Esav. After all, he was told by his mother that Esav wants to kill you. So if someone tells you they want to kill you, I think you should take them seriously. If they sing death to Israel, I mean, I think it's only... You should take them very seriously if someone says something like that.
You always hear about the
exactly. Correct.
Yeah. You always hear about the prayer preparation. You always hear about the bride preparation, but you never hear about the war preparation. Right? I mean, that's what the formations are. They're preparing for a battle. The war was nobody mentions that. It seems
the war was escape.
Okay, so let's see. What does the pasuk say? These are very important. Let's try to get through the view. These are important psukim. The pasuk says, Yaakov Avinu, he broke up his children into his wife into different groups. Where is the pasuk?
What are you looking for?
The order of the children. The wives and the children. Here it is. Vayisa Yaakov Eina Vayav Yinei Esa Bo Yivimoy Arba Vimoy Arba Meos Ish Viachatz. He divided Es Hayaladim Al Lea Vial Rochel Vial Shtei Hashafachos. Vayosem. Now the pasuk goes out of its way to tell us. Vayosem Es Hashafachos V'es Yaldehen Rishoyna. Torah goes out of its way to tell us this. That Yaakov Avinu, who went first, who was in the most vulnerable, in the danger zone? The Shvachos, Bila and Zilpah with their children. They were in the front lines. Who came second? Doesn't tell us, by the way, who went first. Was it first Bila, Zilpah, Zilpah, and Bila?
Okay.
Doesn't say that. Yes, Leah, Viladecha Acharanim, then came Leah. V'yes Rochel, v'yes Yosef Acharanim. Rashi, Pasuk Beis, tells us what's the logic of this order. Rashi says some words which are shocking, which are really opens up a whole new world. Acharoin, acharoin, chaviv. Now let's look very simply, which means the whatever is last, the very last, that is more precious. Which implies whatever is first is less precious. So when you ask Yaakov Avinu from all of you, from your four wives, which one do you value
which
the least?
Do you like most?
What?
Which kids do you like the most?
Exactly. Which wife do you value the least? And which of their children do you value the least? They'll say Bila and Zilpah. So therefore, if someone has to get killed, if someone's going to go into the front lines, so let it be them. What?
It was known.
What do you mean it was known? This would be scandalous. Today, this would be scandalous. Right? Such a pasuk? Having more than one wife is scandalous. Today, Baruch Hashem, we're so used to this, we don't even think. Many of you have very old people who be called Bali Tshuva or Gerim. They ask the most obvious questions. And they ask Rabbanim, Wow. You're right. Good question. Why did I think of that? How come I'm 80 years old? I never thought of that question. And here you have a fellow, such a basic question. This is really scandalous. Over here, he's going to, he's facing death. And if someone has to be a carbon, so let Bilhah and Zilpah, they should be the korbanos. And discrimination, very good, right? Discrimination. And if someone has to survive, so the next best we'll keep alive Leah. But Rachel, she's my favorite. Okay, everybody say. Rachel is my favorite. She's all the way in the back. She's going to be the most protected. It's interesting. She also should know the only couple in the Torah we find had a fight was Yaakov and Rachel. Does not say anywhere in the Torah that Avram ever got angry at Sarah. Doesn't say anywhere that
Yitzchak got angry at him.
What?
She got angry.
Chamosi olecha. Doesn't say she got angry. It says chamosi. Chamosi olecha. I have a complaint. Does not express emotion. There's no expression of emotional pain. Chamosi olecha.
Chamosi means he's not smiling.
I have a complaint against you. I'll take you to a din Torah, but it's not. The word chamosi is not necessarily an emotional response. Abraham to her nothing. Rivka and Yitzchak, even though they were fighting over the worlds. Who's going to get the brachas?
No. Somebody just died and they called and they asked you to do a few things.
We
asking guns.
We have Rachel, Rivka and Yitzchak. Rivka and Yitzchak. They were arguing over who's going to get the brachas. But we don't find anywhere they had a fight. The only one we find had a fight... The only two people we find that got angry was by Yichar Af Yaakov Berachel. When Rachel said to him, Hoveli Bonim, Vim Ayin, Mesa Anoichi. Nowhere do we find there was any bad feeling between Yaakov and Leah and the Shachas, Bil and Zilpah, and Rivka and Rachel, Rivka and Yitzchak, and Avram Sarah. The only one we find had, there was anger by Yichar Af. Yaakov Berachel, Hatachas Elokim Anochi, Ashemona Mimnech Privoten. Don't blame me. I'm not Ribbono Shel Olam. That's a powerful word for the Torah to write. Vayichav Yaakov. And yet, by the way, also the only one that it says in the Torah that there was love was at least love at first sight was Vayehav Yaakov Esrachel. It also says by Rivka Vayevieha El Sorry Imo Vayehaveha. Okay, so it says also by Rivka as well. No pain, no gain. Yeah, yeah.
Why would Rashi even have to say that?
Exactly, that's the question. That is the big mystery. That really is the big mystery. Why is Rashi telling us this? And then really, why is the Pasuk telling us this? There's no need for the Pasuk to tell us this. This is something you find in the Medrash, how exactly they were arranged. Why is it relevant? Like I say, the Torah is telling you something. Obviously, there's a lesson to be learned. It's telling us this. I just want to point out here is that this is a side point. Is that look at this. Even though Yaakov in last week's parasha says Vayichar Af Yaakov Berachel, he was furious, and he doesn't say that about Bilhah and Zilpah, and doesn't say that about Leah. Yet when it came to Sakana, who did he still love the most? Achron Chaviv, Rachel.
You would think. Wasn't he the only one that he called his wife Ish when he was talking to Yosef and Vayichar? He called it my wife. I don't think he called Leah his wife. I think the only one who...
Atta, you love it, Ishielai. Yeah, she had six children from him.
Yes, what did he call
him? Okay, I don't know. I hear what you're saying. I don't know. I just want to make this a side point. Even though Yaakov, in last week's parasha, it says, Vayichar Af Yaakov Berachel. Still, in this week's parasha, there was restoration. They went to a marriage counselor, and everything was fine and good, because Acharon... Acharon Chaviv. He still put her in the safest zone. Okay, that's an interesting point. Sometimes, I told you the story many times, there's a fellow that he was married for 50, 60, 70 years. They made a big party for them, anniversary. Wow, you married for 70 years. How in the world did you stay married for 70 years? How did you pull it off? Tell us, did you ever during those 70 years of marriage once contemplate divorce? Did you ever have a fight? Thought about maybe getting divorced? So the wife, very seriously, she was 100 years old, she was very sharp, she says, divorce, never. Murder! Yes. So even though Vayichar Af Yaakov Berachel, Vayichar Af Yaakov Berachel, he still put her Acharin Acharin Chav. Now here he goes on a beautiful topic. The Das Kanisa. There are many things to discuss in Halacha and Agada. Number one, in Halacha there appears to be many contradictions in the principle of what is the most choshev. Is it the first, or is it the last, or maybe it's in the middle? Where do you find the middle is the most choshev? The middle. Look at the Ner Maravi. There's a machlokes. What is the Ner Maravi? But according to one opinion, the Ner Maravi is the center Ner. The center Ner is the Ner. The center Ner is the Ner, which is the Eidus Shehashchina Shoyna the Yisrael. There is no question. There is no question. It reveals a degree of chashivas of Klal Yisrael, that the Ner Maravi does not go out 24/7, and this reveals that the Shechina is resting in Klal Yisrael. And where did the Ribbono Shalom arrange the Ner Maravi be positioned? Where? So there are two opinions, but according to a very popular opinion, it's right smack in the center. It's right smack. All the Neros, they point towards the center, and the center is the Ner Maravi. It's the Ner Maravi because it's the one that faces the old Neros, they point to the center, and the one in the center, it faces Marav. It faces. So you see here an example of where the center is the most choshev. What about the principle of getting an aliyah? What is the most choshev aliyah? The Kohen, the first, there are seven aliyos. Who gets the most choshev aliyah? The Kohen. And we learn the first aliyah. And then the Levi. And then the Gemara tells us, you give to the Av Beis Din. The Gemara goes through a whole procedure. And it's always, the aliyos, they go down, according to the Gemara, goes down, the most choshev is the first. And the last aliyah is the least choshev. So you see, in other places, where the most choshev is the beginning, and not the end. Now another interesting example, this really goes to town, a lot of the Rishonim, the Romans never thought about this, is in Mitzrayim, they took out with them Klei Chesef, Klei Zav, Usimolos. The Bizas Mitzrayim included utensils of silver, utensils of gold, and clothing. So the question is, what's the logic of the order? If you want to say that the most Choshev, we would assume the most Choshev is gold. Is that not the case? What's the most valuable material? Gold. So if you want to say the most choshev is gold, it should say, we would assume clothing is the least choshev. It should first be silver, it should be clothing, it should be then silver, then gold. If you want to say we want to go in the order where the most choshev is listed first, it should say klei zav, klei chesef, and then smolos. What's the logic of this order? First comes silver, then comes gold, then comes clothing, which seemingly is not very choshev relative to gold and silver. So this is a very big topic of discussion among the Rishonim. What is going on over here? To the degree where many Rishonim say that the most choshev of all of these things was the gold, the clothing. The clothing were more valuable than the gold. We're going up in order. Acharon, acharon chavev. Silver, wonderful. Gold, wow. Usimolos, clothing.
Most clothing. Practical.
Ah, so someone practical. Someone argued clothing exactly what you said. He has all the different opinions. I can't remember all the names. Gold, clothing was not, it was not necessarily more choshev, but it was practical. Because you derive instant benefit, whereas silver and gold, those are things which are decorations, those are things, status symbols, those are things which just enhance, you know, your the beauty of your home. But clothing indeed was most more choshev. Or you can say, you have to remember, they were slaves. These people, they wore tattered garments for 210, they were slaves. 86 years of Shibud Mitzrayim, to give them fresh clothing, to them it was worth more than gold. They can wear freshly laundered garments when they left Egypt. It was priceless. Gold and the silver, or you can say that the utensils, the clothing, in fact, were adorned with ornaments or were woven with threads that were made from gold and silver. And a chanami, you have a gold becher. A gold becher is worth $1,000, but I'm wearing an Armani suit that costs $3,000. So in a chanami, the clothing that I'm wearing is more valuable than the actually. Now, according to that approach, what do you see being listed? What are you going up in order? Acharon, acharon, chaviv. The last is the most chashiv. So first Hashem says, umimoylatcha umibeis avicha. What's the most chashiv? What's the most chashiv luchar is your father's home, avicha. Okay, you know, you can everything. The truth is, after everything said and done, after he analyzes all the different examples in Shas, which I just want to point this out. He analyzes everything, and basically the yisoid is it all depends on the context. Everything, this principle of when do you say something that is first is the most chashiv, when do you say something that is last that is the most chashiv, when do you say something that in the middle is the most chashiv, it all, there is no set rule. There is no set rule in life for these matters. It all depends on the context. Being that we're dealing with war, and Yaakov Avinu is going out to war, and there's a danger, obviously whatever is last in this context is most chaviv. Acharon chaviv. The one that's going to be in closest, further away from the battlefield, that is the more chashav, because in the context of war, that's the safest place to be. And that's when it comes to giving an aliyah, you want to even cover that Torah. So who gets the most chashav aliyah? The first person. The first person called to the aliyah, he's the one that gets the most important aliyah. We give the kohen. The kohen is the most chashav. So it all depends on the context, but it's not so simple. Okay, it's not so simple. Look at Chanukah. Chanukah, is it poiches v'hoylech? Is it moisif v'hoylech? The end of the Yoma. Do we go, is the most chashav day of Chanukah the first day of Chanukah? Is the most chashav day of Chanukah the last day of Chanukah? Zois Chanukas ha-mizbeach. So why then does Beis Shammai say poiches v'hoylech? Why then does Beis Shammai say on the last day of Chanukah you only light one candle? Why does Beis Hillel say the first day of Chanukah you only light one candle? There are different ways to look at Chanukah. And Chanukah is the most chashav day of Chanukah, the first day of Chanukah. Is the most chashav day of Chanukah, the last day of Chanukah. Elu v'elu divrei Elokim chayim. Maybe you should say the middle of Chanukah is the most chashav day of Chanukah. There is no middle of Chanukah. No. What? No. Well, the Ner Maravi, the Ner that's in the center is the most chashav. So these are different things. I don't have clarity. I just find it's very interesting. That's why I wanted to point that out. I want to talk about some halacha and yanim. But the Torah is a full spectrum of different examples where you have to weigh what's more chashav, what's less chashav. Now let's jump to the halacha issue. How was Yaakov even allowed to do this? How are you allowed to select mi yichye umi yamos? Okay, so the person is going out into war. You're allowed to go decide. Allowed to decide. Listen, you're not so important, so you go to the front of doing Iraq and Afghanistan. This is a big deal. You read about this online. Big, big deal. Who goes in the front of the convoys? Because there are bombs. What are they called? IEDs.
Yes.
What are they called?
IED.
What does it stand for?
Improvised explosive device.
IEDs on the roads, and it's sakonis nefashis. And who gets killed? The one that goes in the front. The one that goes in the front of the convoy, they're lined up. They can have 50 Humvees or 20 Humvees or 10 Humvees, and there are foot soldiers and there are tanks, and it's a big deal. Don't kid yourself. Go read online what's going on. It's a big deal. It's a punishment that who goes in front? Because the one that goes in front, the statistics are not very good. The statistics are not very good if you go in front.
Usually they send animals.
Yes. That's right. They do. You're correct. They put animals in front. They put dogs and things in front, and they take the brunt.
People who have a bikis in how to protect the rest of the convoy. They're the ones who really are going to front.
If you have such people, that's true. But let's say not every situation you have specialists who know how to look out for it. You're just dealing with everyone is the same. Okay, in those types of situations, now they don't have enough people to go to do something like that, and then they just go and they have to line up. It's a big deal. Go read online what's going on. What's going on? What?
Someone
who decides. There's a girl. There's a punishment. The commander, he gives the order. I don't like you. You're not nice to me. Are you going in front? You go. You're going in front, and unless you do me a favor. Okay, unless you do me this favor and that favor, you do me a favor, then you know what? You won't go in front, you'll go in the back, you'll go in the middle. And a lot of scandals. So, mi yichye mi yamos, these are very big decisions. And over here, are you allowed to make these decisions? Just because I like this wife better than that wife, that entitles Yaakov Avinu to go and make a decision, mi yichye mi yamos? It's a shocking thing that's going on here in this pasuk. Today, you know, we're saying, yeah.
They say that before 48, the Arab man walked first, his donkey, and then his wife. After 48, when Israel was established, the wife went first, the donkey and the man went last, because of landmines.
Right. That's
worth more than the wife, right?
Of course.
Okay, so I'll give you another example, which is in the news again. I saw it again in the news this week. Today, the hottest investments in industry and technology is driverless cars. Driverless cars, driverless trucks, everything is driverless. So the big, they're really grappling with this. Again, it was in the news, is that the people are sitting, the programmers are sitting behind computers, and they're thinking about the scenarios, life and death scenarios, where Rahman al-Islam, the driverless car, is going, and the driverless car, the artificial intelligence, realizes, wait a minute, if I keep on going, I'm going to crash, because there's someone in the way. Someone does not belong on the road. And I'm traveling 70 miles an hour. And if I keep on going, the person in the car is going to die. There's going to be head-on collision. And it's not my fault. It's the fault of someone else, some other driverless company who didn't program their car well. Right? Right? Someone doesn't know what they're doing. So what would a human being do in this situation? So if a human was driving the car, Rahman al-Islam, every human being would make a different decision. Some of them would swerve this way, some this way. But if you swerve this way, you might kill someone on this lane. If you swerve this way, there's a bus coming here. Mm. So maybe the impact will shelter you from the... Yeah. There are a million different things a person can do, and the person, a human being, has to make a split-second decision what to do to minimize the damage, to minimize who's going to die. Sometimes there are some noble people that are willing to sacrifice themselves so that someone else should not die. And there are people that cannot be limited in that necessity, and they don't want to, they're going to decide they're going to live. Maybe they're entitled to. Chayecha koidmin, but someone else is going to have to die. Who should die? This guy or this guy? The guy in front, the guy in side, and the guy in the back. What does a person do? So no one knows what they would do in such a situation. Rahman al-Islam, every situation is different. And the person just makes a split-second decision. And sometimes he's not even making a decision. It's happening subconsciously, or there are other factors. But when you're programming the cars built into the technology, is the car realizes, the sensors tell it, that there's going to be a collision. And it has options. The options are to swerve this way, or to go forward, or to hit on the brakes. And if it does this, this one's going to die. If it does this, this one's going to die. If it does nothing, this one's going to die. And a decision has to be made. And who's making these decisions? The programmer. The programmer sitting somewhere in a college in California or in New York or in Arizona, they're sitting behind the desk, and they're grappling with this scenario, and they're programming this scenario into the computer, into the code of the driverless car. Mi yichye, mi yamos. So what do you do? Okay, I obviously there are many scenarios. Obviously they're dealing with scenarios, and someone has to die. So what you have to go ask a rav. What should you program the computer to do? And this can play out in 10 years from now. It can play out, hopefully it'll never play out. But this code that this fellow is sitting and making these decisions right now and telling the computer what to do will play out at some point in the time. It's not like a human being which just acts on impulse or just makes a subconscious decision, and every single person is different. Sometimes you can say you have siyat shmaya. What was done, what was not done. Here, there's no siyat shmaya. We didn't go here with the computer. And you're instructing the computer now what to do. What to do in this given situation. And you can bet your bottom buck that whatever it's going to do 10 years down the line, there's going to be a massive lawsuit. Why this programmer made this decision. Why this company allowed the computer to make this decision. To allow this person to live and this person to die. And they're going to sue every penny they can get out of this company. Why they allowed that decision to be made. Who gave you the right on mi yichye u mi yamos? Who gave you the right? These are very major legal issues which are now being worked out right now by all the big people involved in ethics and the courts and laws, because these are very, very serious issues. And it can bankrupt a company very quickly when one of these decisions has to be made and someone dies or lives because of the baseline decision the programmer is making. Look, you have a Makar over here and this Pasuk over here. Look what's going on over here. Yaakov Avinu is making here a major decision over here, who's going to live and who's going to die. How in Halacha is he allowed to make such a decision? So first, let's discuss the Mishnah. It's a very popular Mishnah, the Mishnah Masechet Trumos. I think it's Masechet Trumos. I remember when the Mishnah says, if Goyim come to a city and they say, give us someone. We want to make an example of this community. We want to kill someone to make it as a punishment for what you've done to us. We want someone. And know what? We're going to give you, in the Holocaust, this was very common, the Nazis would say to a mother, you give us one of your children, and we'll let the other ones live. You decide which child is going to die. So women, they lost their mothers, they lost their minds from this. Nazis, they would say to a mother, she has five children, if you give me one of your children, you decide which one should die, the other four I'll let live. But if you don't give me a child, I'll kill them all. I'll kill them all. And you have 2 minutes to make this decision, or I'm going to kill them all. And then the mother, okay, every story is different, gave one of her children, and he was killed. And the mother, these mothers, the rest of their lives, they live with guilt. Every single moment of their lives, what did I do? How could I have done that? Well, who am I to decide? Can you imagine the horror of making such decisions? So the Mishnah talks about this. The Mishnah says, you don't do it. The Mishnah says that if a person comes to a city, a goyim come to a city, and they say, we want a person. We want you decide who you give us. If you don't give us that one person, we'll wipe out 10,000 people. What about 100,000 people? So the halach is you're not going to give them anyone. The halach is you cannot decide, no human being in the city can decide, miyichim yamos, better let the goyim wipe out the whole city than to give over one person. It's a feirush Mishnah. However, if the goyim come to a city and they say, we want Pliny, we want this guy, there's a traitor in your city, his name is Reuven ben Shimon, give us Reuven ben Shimon or we'll kill the whole city. Then you're allowed to give him. If they demand a... What?
Isn't that what happened with Yoav?
Yes. You give a specific person. She did. The woman there, the Isha Chachama, she did it. She gave over the person. They dropped the head. They cut the guy's head off. And they threw it over the wall. And that was the end. She saved the whole city. In a Chalani. So if you demand a specific person, then yes, then you are allowed to give over that person. That you are allowed to give over a specific person. Yaakov over here doesn't know who's going to die. Okay, he's putting them into a danger zone. So over here, Yaakov L'chayr is making, L'chayr he's in violation, because over here, Esav is not coming for a specific person. Yaakov Avinu is coming, putting a person L'chayr in a much more dangerous zone. What is going on over here? How is he allowed to do this? Okay, so this is getting, the problem just getting bigger. Now there's a Chazonish talks about a scenario where if there is a bomb, let's say in the technology, let's say there is a missile, they probably can do this today, there's a missile that's about to land in a populated area, and it's going to, and L'chayra, when the missile lands, many people are going to die. But you have an option now of changing the trajectory of this missile, guiding it, moving it through technology or some other technique, that instead of it coming down in this populated area, having it move to a different location, but it's going to for sure kill a person there. But it's the damage will not be as intense as it comes over. If it comes over here, it's going to kill, let's say, 50 people. If we're able to redirect it, it'll kill one or two people, but different people. It's going to come and move it in this direction. One or two people are going to die in this city, but the 50 people over here are going to be saved. Big Shiloh, what do you do? Are you allowed to do that? Are you allowed to go?
The Iron Dome?
What?
The Iron Dome?
That's not necessarily the Iron Dome. The Iron Dome's goal is no one gets killed. No one gets killed.
No, that's why they tell you to stay inside, because it blows up.
It blows up.
Any war situation, the general makes a decision with the first. Any war situation.
If the decision is made on strategy, and there's a certain type of soldier that is trained for the front lines, and there's a certain type of soldier that's trained to come in behind, like in football, right? There's the quarterback, the front line. There are certain people that have specialties. There are people who have specialties. So that's part of battle. But we're dealing over here with protection. They're all the same. Rachel, Leah, Bilhah, Zilpah, they're all the same. The question here is partial survival. The question over here is survival. And that's really what the Zohar says. The Zohar Kamat says, the Zohar is the most shocking parish of all the Rishonim on this approach. Basically, if someone's going to die, better it be Bilhah and Zilpah and not Leah. And if between Leah and Bilhah and Rachel, better let Leah die and not Rachel die. Actually, Achron, Achron, Chaviv. When the day is over, who do I want to remain alive? Who is more Chaviv my eyes? Rachel, it's a shocking thing. How are you allowed to decide me Yichya me Yamos? So the only way that lightens the issue is, you have to understand something over here. First of all, there are a few things that lighten the question. Number one is, who says anyone's going to die? All of the exactly in the examples that we're dealing with, they discuss with these shilas, there's a missile coming. Someone's going to die. Okay, the missile's going to land in a populated area. The question is, can we redirect the mitzvah from this area and have it go to another area, and one person will die, even though it was not meant for him to die. I'm causing him to die to save 50 more people. Right. Tough shaila. But over here, who says anyone's going to die? So Taka, some say yeah. Some say you're allowed to do that. You'll have to go after the number, since over here only one person will die, and there 50 people will die, even though the one person that's going to die might be a different person.
Maybe only he was the target. Only Yaakov.
Right.
And there was to say that.
So you're saying another star, no one was meant to die. Exactly. No, who says anyone has to die? Who says anyone has to die? Maybe Esav is coming in peace.
Right.
So if it's a guarantee that someone's going to die, the driverless cars, the programming scenarios, someone's going to die. Someone's going to die. The question is who? Who gives you the right to decide mi yichya mi yamos? Big problem. A missile is coming in one direction, you want to redirect the missile. You're coming to a city, give us someone from the city. You have no right to decide mi yichya mi yamos. In this scenario, first of all, to lessen the severity of what is taking place, who says anyone's going to die? I'm sending him a lavish gift and being mistalel. Maybe he's coming in peace. Number two, there's another very important principle. This is a very critical principle. This is an amazing thing. The Rishonim say this. He quotes here one of the Rishonim. You know why Yaakov was allowed to make this decision? This decision in Echanami is osser. It's Kenei Kol Tarukul, what Yaakov Avinu did. But there's one reason why he was allowed to do this. The who of our lefnehem. He went in front. I'm going to be the first one to die. I'm going to go. If you go in front, unbelievable what it says here. You got to see this inside. The who of our lefnehem. He lined them all up. If anyone's going to remain alive, let Rachel, and yes, I'm going to decide who's going to remain alive. But guess what? I'm not going to be here to see it. I'm going to be dead. I'm on the front lines. If someone dies, I die first. The who of our lefnehem. Isn't that what it says? I'm going to be the first one to take the hit. So I'm gone. I'm out. Who are my survivors? Who's going to fight over the Yerusha? We have four of them. If there's one person less who's going to fight over the Yerusha, let the one that's not going to be fighting over the Yerusha be Dylan Zilpah. And if then we'll knock off Leah. That changes the dynamics 100%. If you are not going to be in this world to see it, then ain't a chinami. Then the Torah is telling us, it's still a chiddush, don't get me wrong. There's still a decision, mi yichya mi yamos. Let's not lessen, but it definitely changes the whole perspective when you're in the front.
The Israeli army, the leaders always...
Always? Not always. Not anymore. It used to be like that. Not anymore. I think things have changed.
Not the generals, but the leader of the...
I don't know. I always believe that was true.
You go.
I think there are different. There are different units. There are different types of battles. Okay, there are different. It's not so silly. Yeah.
This is a little different, no? Because when you have to pick one person out of the city, you're picking one person out of the city. But here, somebody has to go.
Who has to go? What do you mean? Who has to go?
When he lines the people up,
yeah.
They're marching. They're going across the river.
Yeah.
Somebody has to. There has to be some order.
Go first. There has to be some order. Yeah. But who says you're allowed to make an order like this? Make a girl. Take a girl. Draw straws.
I mean, that would be an option. And it's much more dangerous if you would put them all on.
Okay. So someone has to go first. So let's eeny, meeny, miny, mo. The par over here is telling us that Yaakov made a conscious decision who goes first. Who goes in the front lines? And Rashi says, Rashi's a chiddush. Maybe you would say he made a goyrel. Api ruach hakodesh. Who know you got all these bizarre answers. How did Yaakov do this? Oh, ruach hakodesh. Rashi, he knocked out a whole library. Can you imagine? There could have been a whole library over here. All these lumnisha reasons how it turned out that they went in this order. Right, Umbetum told you. Rashi says, no. Chaviv, achrein, chaviv. He liked Rachel more than he liked Leah. Simple, very simple. He protected her from danger. Rashi, it's incredible what Rashi says. Rashi is shocking what Rashi says.
Later on, he favored Rachel's
kitchen. Okay, but if not for Rashi, you would say it was a girl. This is the way it worked out. Rashi is telling us he made a decision, mi yichya mi yamos, which goes against everything that we know in Shulchan Aruch. You're not allowed to make such decisions. Even when it comes to danger areas. So what are you going to say? Well, there's no guarantee anyone's going to die altogether. So then you are allowed to make such decisions. The, he brings over, at the end of the book over here, he brings up sort of a holocaust of a fellow who had a number of children, and he hid them at the time when the Nazis came. And he had different types of hiding places. And some were better, some were worse. He took his favorite son, it says, his favorite son, the one that he really loved the most, secretly, and he hid him in the best, in the most secure hiding place. And the other children he hid in different places that were not as secure. The other children were caught and were killed. And the son that he favored the most, was never found and survived the war. And this fellow, the rest of his life, lived with guilt. He lived in horror that he made this decision. He could not live with himself. What gave me the right to decide which child should go into that hiding place? How did I have a right to make that decision? And he couldn't live with himself. It's a horror. Forget about halacha. Okay, just think about the psychological impact of what these people have to live with. Let's say Yaakov would have went to war, and then in Echanani, Bilhah and Zilpah would have died. How would Yaakov live with himself the rest of his life? Every time he looks at Rachel and Leah, it's you and not them. Yaakov was a chacham. You know, we're not dealing over here. Forget about halacha. There has to be also chacham as well. I mean, this is very shocking what it says over here in these psukim over here. But you take this idea in the consideration of one of them, that there's other approaches which are very interesting, very, very interesting, two more approaches. But these approaches are not satisfying because it's hard for us to relate to them. And that is number one. The other approach is, Yaakov, you know, he did this, we shouldn't say this, is because he felt who was in the least sakon. Yaakov was a spiritual person. No one's going to die in this world unless Shema Yigrem HaChet. He actually said, Kontoiti Mikol HaChasad Hashem told me, Ushmarticha. So Yaakov said, between all my four wives, which wife is in the most danger? Rachel is the most susceptible, most vulnerable to being killed. Why? Because from all of my wives, she's the one who I married in sin. You're not allowed to marry two sisters. You're not allowed to marry two sisters. Bilhah and Zilpah are not sisters. I know you'll tell them Midrashim, they were sisters. Put it aside. Let's assume now Bilhah and Zilpah were just ordinary people. There's no avera for Yaakov at all to marry Bilhah and Zilpah. To marry Rachel and Leah together is an avera. He has to divorce one of them. So they're really both partners in sin. But he married Leah first. So Leah, between the two, which one was a greater violation of halacha between the two? Rachel. Leah is also, he married in sin after everything is said and done. So when you want to line them up, when the Satan is mekatrik, and this is a spiritual approach, I told you, I warned you, it's not satisfying for those who are much more down to earth, but in the spiritual world, which of the four were more vulnerable? We're more vulnerable to being killed in the Satan being mekatrik and succeeding in having them die. The most vulnerable was Rachel, because he married her in sin. Leah was the second most vulnerable. Bilhah and Zilpah, there was no avera. There's nothing to worry about. Ushmarticha b'chol asher telech. The only reason why I'm afraid, Rashi says, Shema yigrei machet. Hashem promised to me, Ushmarticha. There's nothing to worry about. The Ribbono Shalom said, you're okay. Shema yigrei machet. Bilhah and Zilpah, there's no chet. They're safe. They can go in the front. Leah, it's a shtickel chet. So she goes next. Rachel is kula chet. So Rachel is the most vulnerable. Another answer which is similar, very similar, is when it says we put them in order, does not mean, this is a shocking chiddush to say this, it does not mean he put them in physical order. Does not mean that. Doesn't mean who they walked single file, who went to the front lines. We have no idea how they walked. We have no idea. Maybe there was a girl. Maybe they walked together. Maybe we have no idea. When it says he put them by Yosem es hashvachos v'yes yaldeim rishayna, it means first in his tfilos. They had the least of their own merit. These were simple people. Shvachos. When he davened Shmoyne Esrei, we're going to war. L'tfila, Rashi says, a doyoin, a present, strategy, tfila. So let's daven Shmoyne Esrei. When I daven Shmoyne Esrei, who am I going to be mespalel for first? Rachel, Leah, the Bilhah and Zilpah? Rachel is a tzadekis. Rachel doesn't need my tzilas. Rachel nevake al boneha. We need her tzilas. Rachel, I can dive in for last. She'll be okay. Leah, Zoichret Tzadekes. She's in the Maris Machpelah. Bilah and Zilpah, they need more tefillah. They're weaker. So when it says in the Pasuk Grishayna, it means in tefillah. That was first in his mind, the Kecha Tefillah. Then he was mispal for Leah, and then he was mispal for Rachel. A whole new twist. I told you, you gotta be a certain type of person to appreciate this answer. I'm from the poor down to earth people. You take the Pasuk at its word firsthand, you have the Shilas, and the only thing which I really have a geschmack is Vilhu Ovar Lifnehem. If you go in the front and you're the first one to take the bullets, okay, then when you start making decisions, it's with a whole different perspective. And when you talk about what's more chavit, you know, it doesn't necessarily mean who you like more. It can very well mean achra and achra and chaviv, your own negias are not there, who I like, who's prettier, who I have more satisfaction from. It has to do with more other things. Chavivus does not mean negias. It has to do with other spiritual matters. Why do I know that? I'm not no gamba davar. I'm not going to be around to see it. I'm in the front. I'm going to take the first bullet. So then I have a different perspective of who should remain over in this world. That's satisfying to some degree. Okay, but these are the questions, the issues, the questions. What? These are the issues, the questions. And I'm telling you, it's mamish. Read the news from Nogea Halacha Lemaisa today when you're dealing with technology, especially driverless technology. They're sitting, as we talk, they're sitting now making these decisions. And they have to consult with legal experts, with rabbis, and who knows what else.